Hi, this is Robinson Wells, author of The Counterfeit, and you're listening to the LDS Women's Book Review.
Welcome to LDS Women's Book Review. And this is a fun little podcast because we don't have any specific authors that we're talking about or specific books we've read. This is just going to be a free-for-all of our recommendations and also other things that have been sent to us that look like really good Christmas presents. And since Christmas is coming up soon and a lot of us are starting our Christmas shopping, some of us are already done. Ha ha, Sheila.
Yeah.
Hey, mine's on layaway.
I have a couple things. I've done a lot of window shopping, so I have ideas.
That's good.
And there's a lot of listeners who aren't in Utah or even in the West that don't have ready access to an LDS bookstore. And they do, if they want to order these things, it's online. And so hopefully you'll be able to find this a useful podcast for selected gifts for your loved ones for Christmas. Or even just books you want to give suggestions to somebody else.
They can be from Santa in their stocking. Come
exactly.
on.
Exactly. I'd like to ask your forgiveness for my any voice or coughing or clearing of throats, that voice issues that might happen, because I'm currently suffering from a head cold, but I'll try not to hack too much. I just want to thank Rob Wells again for coming out last month. We had such
so
a fun discussion with him, and I know he probably thinks we're all nuts now, but...
Well, that's because we are. So is he. He fit right in. He fit right in.
And he learned the truth right away. But it was so much fun. It was a long podcast, but it was wonderful.
If you haven't listened to it, download this podcast. You have to hear last month's.
It was episode 8.
Fabulous. Absolutely fun.
We just had a lot of fun. It was interesting to get a little insight into what it is like to write a book in the LDS market and how it's marketed and everything. And if you're interested in ever writing a book, that could be, you know, there could be some useful information in there for you. Since that last podcast, we've been contacted by Deseret Book, and they have sent us different books to read and review on this podcast, and we're going to be talking about some of those today. Some of them we've flipped through, some we've read, and some we just really want to read. And hopefully you'll be able to find some books that interest you as well. So I think we're just going to let this flow however it wants to go. We decided structure wasn't really going to work with this because there are so many things we want to cover. So hang in there with us and we'll just see where this podcast takes us. We have a lot of good books to talk about. A lot of fun things that would make awesome Christmas presents for families. And mm-hmm. even, you know, things like traditional books that you can read every Christmas and things like that.
Yep.
Sheila, you've done a lot of reading. I want to start with you.
When doesn't Sheila do a lot of reading? Come on. It's been a busy month for me, too. Had my primary program happening and fun stuff in preschool and just everything else. So, yeah.
And you still managed to get it done.
I did.
Just devoted.
Yes, I managed to read everything. Do you want to know what I have read?
Is sure, yeah, go ahead.
Well, I finished reading Poison by Betsy Brannan Green. That is excellent. Excellent book.
Is it Haggerty?
It's one of the Haggerty series. It's right. It's right in line after Copycat. So, and it was so good. And then I also read the Betsy Brannan Green and the Haggerty series, which is called Double Cross.
Mm-hmm.
It's all about Mark. And he's out of
is
the States.
Really?
And it's excellent. It's so different from any of them.
I have
that
one.
It is very good.
I can't wait to read it.
And then I read her newest, which is Christmas in Haggerty.
Oh.
And
it's a nice, it's a sweet little book.
It is.
I actually picked it up at the murder mystery dinner because she was there and I had her sign a copy for Sheila and I. And it's just a cute little, I don't know what size it is. It's like maybe
it's
6-7 inches by 5 inches. And it's only...
It's not very
long. It's just
long.
Over 100 pages long.
It's a small looking
Kate's
book.
Christmas cookies. It has recipes
yes!
in the back.
No, all of her books. That's what I love about Betsy Brannan Green's books. They all have
the
these wonderful recipes at the back, and I need to start trying them.
This looks
but
really, really good, actually.
I have a friend whose husband likes to listen to books on tape.
Uh-huh.
And he, I told
him
about...
Does he listen to this podcast?
I don't know if he has or not. I'll have to ask him, but... I told him about Betsy Brannan Green because he likes the mysteries and he's been, but he thought Poison was one of her best also because
mm-hmm.
it is just so good. It just, he figured out who did it before I did. So I figured it out in chapter 4. I went, It took me a little bit longer, but.
Some people are just lucky guessers.
I guess so. I was too much into the story train. I don't know. She's just so good.
You know, and sometimes you get to a book, a mystery book, and you automatically start trying to figure out who it is. But with Betsy, you can relax and just let the story
you
flow.
You do, and it's so wonderful.
You know you're going to find out, and you just want to go along for the ride. Sometimes you have your suspicions, and sometimes you're right. But all about the story. It's not necessarily about figuring out who did it before everyone else.
Exactly.
It's just the experience of the story.
Exactly. I just want to say that if you are wanting to get into the Haggerty Mystery Series, be really careful. Try, because you don't want to read them in the wrong order. You can read them all on their own, but if you can read them in the right order, then it makes
much more richer
makes more
experience.
Sense. Well, it makes more sense. Hearts in Hiding.
Which we talked about.
Right. Until Proven Guilty is second. Above Suspicion. Silenced. Then Copycat, which we also talked about on the podcast. Poison, Double Cross, and then Christmas in Haggerty. It just will make everything make so much more sense. Because she also has three other books that don't
aren't
have
related.
Right, that aren't related to Haggerty. Never Look Back, Don't Close Your Eyes, and Foul Play. But these are the best books. I want these for Christmas. I haven't even told anybody I want that. Maybe I should just go buy them.
I've never come across a series, especially a mystery series,
right.
that is as full and rich as these are.
Truly, I agree.
That you can read, and it's, you know, everyone is not the same. They have their own little things. They
totally
are integrity, and they're with different characters,
mm-hmm.
but they all still tie in. And, like, Hearts in Hiding was different than the next one, whichever one was after that.
Right. Well, and
Until Proven Guilty
takes place in Hawaii.
At the wedding?
Yeah, at
really?
The wedding. It takes place in Hawaii. And then Double Cross takes place in Cartagena.
No one can say that Mark and Kate lead a boring life.
Oh, heavens no. Especially after you read Double Cross. It's like, whoa. It kept me going. It was.
But they also have little, they have touching things. You know, like, I thought that Hearts in Hiding, I liked that one better than Until Proven Guilty.
Heavens, yeah.
But I still liked Until Proven
right.
Guilty.
It was
but
good.
it wasn't necessarily, like, my favorite.
No.
You know, kind of, like, the characters weren't as charismatic to me as Kate and Mark were. But I still enjoyed the story.
Exactly.
There was still, I loved
right.
seeing
right.
Pollyanna and all those people from the different angles.
It's
and,
funny, yeah.
You know, and so it's just like real, it's, have you, in your real life, have you ever thought, what would it be like if I can just see through their eyes and like maybe kind of step into their shoes and just see what's going on? Or it's kind of nice to be able to see how other people view the same characters like Miss Eugenia and everything.
And you do that when you read her
mm-hmm.
books.
And I
get
think
to see them from different
Betsy Brennan Green is. Well, she's pretty much just a sure shot.
Yeah,
you know, if you know someone who likes mystery and who likes LDS fiction,
a little bit of romance here and there, rich characters. I mean, she develops her characters so well.
Mm-hmm. And then Betsy Brennan Greene's books are the way to go.
And I also read the other books for the podcast. We don't need to talk about those right now.
Yeah, we'll get to them.
Yeah, so.
And what about you, Hillary? Read anything?
What didn't I read? I read a lot this month.
Did you?
I did. And I even managed to scrapbook in between readings.
Good for you.
I only scrapbooked like 3 pages this month.
I did
too. I haven't done anything in months.
I only did 2, so I'm a little behind.
That's okay. Only.
That's okay.
You're 2 ahead of where you were.
That's the way I look at it with my 3.
Doesn't matter that you took another 50 pictures.
Yes, that's right.
You're still 2 pages ahead of where you were.
Thank goodness Snapfish has that. By prepay, you know. Yeah, because I'm going to be using almost all of that, I swear, next month, because I took so many pictures this month. Anyway, I read an awesome, 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 awesome book that sounds like, okay, I'll tell you the title. It's Strangling Your Husband is Not an Option by
Marilee
Brown
Boyack. She's the one that wrote that
Parenting Breakthrough,
right.
Which was awesome as well. I have to tell you, my sister-in-law recommended this book to me, and at first I was thinking, because she reads, but, you know, she doesn't read like you and I do very, mm-hmm. you know, the 3 of us just can't read enough kind of idea. She reads periodically. She's like, oh, Hillary, this is a really good book. You should read it. And it's on sale over at the outlet store, and I'm like, oh, well, I'll get around to it, you know, whatever. I'll go put it on hold at the library, you know, my standard procedure. And I'm buying it. Hands down. I cannot wait to buy it.
Right.
Awesome. Because it sounds like it's to fix your husband kind of thing, when really it's to fix yourself.
Wow.
And it's ways to look at your husband in different ways.
Who's the author again?
Marilee Brown Boyack.
And Strangling Your Husband
is not an option. And it is just as cute as the title implies. but it's just a very... It's, in fact, I learned so much about myself reading that and about my husband and why I shouldn't. I mean, she's not a man, obviously, but she understands, you know, how the male psyche works to a certain extent. And I loved it. I just was so excited to read it, and I took tons of notes in my
like
my little
book.
Yearly book review binder I have. It's good. I take notes and put it in a folder for the whole year and then get a new one next year. But anyway.
It probably wouldn't make a great gift because someone... If you gave that to someone, they could probably take offense.
Unless you bought it for yourself.
You're like,
not necessarily, because most people read it with the idea. Well, most people read it and they go, oh, okay, this is how to fix my husband. Great! You know, and really, it's not. It has nothing to do with fixing your husband. Well, actually, it does fix your husband, but it's because of things you do.
You know, it sounds like it's a lot like Dr. Laura's how to... proper care and feeding of husbands.
Yes, it does.
Yes.
Yeah.
I haven't read that one, but I've heard enough about it to say that it's probably similar.
It's spunky. It has, you know, some swear words and stuff in it, but if you don't care about that kind of thing or it's not a big deal to you, there's a lot of good advice in there. I read, like, the first half of it, and then I got caught up in podcast stuff and wasn't able to finish it. But just, I apologized to my husband. I approached him on some things because I realized that when I was... Yeah, I mean, I was trying to let him do things in his own way, and a lot of times he wasn't doing it because he was feeling like, why bother because I'm going to do it wrong anyway.
Aww. I do that to my husband on some things, too.
I've tried.
I mean, it's just those things, you're like,
I was approaching it wrong. When things are, and so I went and we went out to dinner, actually, for maybe our anniversary or something, and I apologized to him, and I said I didn't realize it was coming across this way, and... So he understood what I needed from him. I understood what he needed from me, at least on that subject. And it was really nice to. We don't fight or anything, but you know, we're not really big. We're not fighters, you know. But we still have disagreements. We just don't have knockdown dragouts,
which is very typical.
We just talk about things, and we're like, yeah, whatever. And my husband's so easygoing that he's just kind of like, yeah, whatever, you know. And usually it's me being unhappy and him saying I'm sorry. This is what the whole thing is. And so it was nice for him to. It was nice for him to have an apology for me, and you know, I mean, he deserved it. So
I'm sorry. This is good.
He doesn't really listen very much, except for when I'm editing. So if I can edit this, before
you don't want to edit. This is good. This is good stuff that other women need to realize that. If maybe they're having marital problems, that other people do too. Because so many people think that we all live in this idyllic LDS world.
And everyone else has a perfect life.
Well, you look at it. You know, we all show up at church on Sunday in our nice church clothes, our hair combed, makeup on.
But nobody can see what's going on
inside. And
we all
sit there and hold hands with our husbands if we can get near them, if our kids
are
near
us. Yeah, it's like if we can sit next to them.
You know what I'm saying? And everybody thinks that everything is okay, but it's okay to realize that everyone's marriage just has trials. Mm-hmm. We all have disagreements with our spouses, and if we didn't, then that means our spouse isn't around. You know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, true.
And so it's okay. So I don't edit any of this. It needs to be talked about.
It's an awesome book. I don't know if go as far as to say every LDS woman should read this, but I would. I think it's, if nothing else, good advice.
It's not going to hurt.
It's not going to hurt you any. That's for sure. And mm-hmm. I loved it. And what's funny is I read that one, then I read Sync Reflections right after that.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
which is
I love
perfect because it went tied right in.
What,
you know?
What's her name again?
Marla
Silly.
There we go.
The fly lady. If you don't fly yet, you need to go start flying.
So, and that tied right in perfectly because there were some things that in Mary Lee's book that
echoed, very
similar to things that they talked about in Sync Reflections. So, not as far as cleaning necessarily, but as far as yourself.
Because it is all about attitude.
It is.
Well, and her whole book with Sync Reflections is all about changing the entire you. Uh-huh. Not just cleaning your house. You've got to change you, and that's where that body clutter
comes
in.
Why you do things.
Exactly. It's a mental thing.
Have you read the body clutter book?
I'm not going to borrow that. I'm getting rid of my body clutter currently,
so
I would like to borrow that.
You know what? I actually got that from the library, too.
Yes.
And three other books that I'll tell you here in a second, and I did not get a chance to finish it. In fact, I didn't even start it because I had just this stack of books from the library, and I went, okay, there's no way I'm going to read these all in time. So I just gave up
good.
And returned some of them.
I like it because it has the workbook, and I got the workbook at the same time, the body clutter workbook.
Right.
And I just started going through. This is before I got pregnant.
Right. Well, not now.
Yeah,
so
not
I can't do it now.
So I can borrow your book right now, right?
Yes.
Thank you.
But it was interesting to see where you're, you know, like how we eat emotionally and things like that, where our feelings are stemming from, and just kind of think of things in a slightly different way. Just to step back and take a slight turn and see things from a different angle, and I'd be like, I'm sure that, like, Dr. Phil and other people have addressed those similar kind of things. There's a lot of similar themes that run through a lot of the emotional weight emotional eating and things books that have been coming out lately. But it was nice coming from someone who's a down-to-earth, salt-of-the-earth, just like struggles just like everybody else person.
Not
like
a doctor, silly. Clinical psychologist,
exactly.
Or
who's
something.
On TV.
Well, it's good that now they are realizing it's just not a matter of watching what you eat and exercising. It's a matter that you have to change
psychological
in your mind, the way you look at food and the reasons why you eat. And
to help you heal. Because
exactly.
The healing
otherwise,
is what's
it won't
going,
change.
Mm-hmm, healing is
I
what's
know.
Going to change it.
I agree.
But anyway, so...
Okay, so I read that. And I still have, like, the last two chapters to finish, but I'm not too stressed because... It's all online, too, so there you go.
Yeah.
And then I started reading Night by Eli Wiesel, or Wiesel, how do you say his name?
I don't know.
I'm
it's
sure.
The Oprah Book Club.
Oh, yes, but I didn't get to start that one either. It's about his experiences in a concentration camp.
Oh, yes,
so,
I would like to, I saw him on Oprah that day.
And I didn't see it on Oprah, actually, that was, I just happened, I heard of it, and
was
some, maybe that's
very,
why.
Very powerful.
Oh, I'm
I
sure.
I mean, Oprah was crying, he was crying, I was crying, I'm sure everybody else was,
you know,
the, was very
that
touching,
has always gotten
moving.
Right to the core of me.
Me too.
What happened?
Well, and Viktor Frankl's story is similar to that
and
one
that's
as
one,
well.
That's, on, that's one of my books.
It has on your favorite list.
Man's Search for Meaning is
yes.
Fabulous.
And that's another
yes.
one I need to finish because I didn't get to finish those one
such
yet. And I didn't
book.
Even start Night because I just
I
have so many things on my plate
you
right
know
now.
What? That might be a good one for us to do for
we
a podcast.
We should do one
yeah.
that for a podcast.
Seriously. It is just so
maybe do both of them, Man Search for Meaning and
I've already got Man Search for Meaning all
well, hey.
Marked
well, good
up
for you.
Notes all over.
And two would be fun too is The Hiding Place one of these days
oh,
too.
Actually, yeah.
I mean, maybe we should have a Holocaust remembrance
I don't know. I'm worried
sure.
that it would. I'm worried that it would be a depressing podcast.
Are you kidding? The
so uplifting
place is not. It's very uplifting.
The strength and the courage of these people to have survived.
Are you
what
talking
they
about
did.
The ones where they were in the boats?
The boats.
No,
no
we're talking
there was,
is not the boats.
There was one that I read where it was about the dogs that would sniff out the people hiding in boats
wow.
when they were trying to escape from. I'm not even sure where, but it was part of the book club from the old neighborhood.
Really.
So I'll try and remember
yeah,
that one, because I have that list somewhere that of books we read, and we can read that one, too, if you want. But I'm really worried it would be a depressing
You know, the
podcast.
Thing is...
Because it's a really somber
subject.
Well, and
the thing
it is
a somber subject,
the
but...
The thing I love about Man's Search for Meaning, it just shows you where you just pull out of these reserves inside of yourself to just... I mean, where you don't think you have the courage, you don't think you have the strength to survive trials. It is amazing the things that you get from those books.
Mm.
Because these are incredible. Yeah, I mean, just the ideas that they can give you of how to deal with life and how to deal with your challenges. And I mean, I have so many quotes that I just love from Viktor Frankl from Man's Search for Meaning. That that's why I love it. That's why I think it would be worthwhile looking into.
Yeah, well,
maybe
I
only read two of them or something.
Well, or like a bigger one and then one of the... Because this one was a fat... The one that I... That
Night
we
is
that
very
was a
small.
Man's Search for Meaning
and Man's Search for Meaning
yeah,
is not
too
big. They're actually... None of them are really all that big.
Yeah,
I mean, The Hiding Place is kind of big, but...
Well, it'd be interesting if we
to
read more and be able to compare yes. the differences and the similarities. So,
okay. That's
we'll
good.
Just... I wrote those down so we can remember.
That is good. So I read that, and then I read 12 Simple Secrets Every Wise Mother Knows or Should Know. I can't remember which is which. And it was okay. I mean, you could just read the first, I read the, in fact, to be honest with you, I opened it up and I read the 12 secrets, wrote them down.
I
did went,
too.
I already know that. And shut it
down. I got that from, I got that also from the library. I think I did the same thing. It's like, oh yeah, I know that. I
yeah,
know that
it's very
yeah.
common. I mean, if you think about it, when you're, especially when you're reading the list, you're like, oh, well, okay, I know that.
That's funny. I did the same thing.
So
I did
get read
that
it. I just
ago.
Read it. I just
yeah.
read the opening it. Cover and went, oh, okay. You know, I read
that's
the,
funny.
The, what's it called? The index. Gosh.
Yes.
And
yes.
figured it all
contents.
Out. The contents, thank you. The index is at the back. Yes, I read. Anyway. And then I have at home waiting for me two more books that I am going to read. And one is None Dare Call It Education, which because that's one of my platforms if I were in beauty pageants, would be education system. But anyway, so I'm reading that one. It would be a very scary beauty pageant.
Now, as we sit here looking at each other on a Saturday morning,
as
Saturday looks,
as my head feels twice as big as normal because of
you're
my
like
head
that,
cold.
That lady in the commercial with the big balloon head. Have you seen that one?
That's how much they love me. Can you hear how much they love me? Your head is swollen.
Well, no, you're the
only part. Only part of that
oh,
is
man.
Bad. The rest, the rest is packed in there,
man.
My sinuses. Okay,
anyway.
So, and then
I'm reading that one.
You have one more written down there.
Oh, and I have another one in my head. And that's the Five Love Languages of Children. Oh. And I'm going to read that one. I haven't read it yet, but I'm going to. Because now my kids are a little bit older, so it would make more sense. When I first read it, it was 5 years ago. My oldest was two.
Yeah.
And it just doesn't make any difference when they're two, really. Yeah. They want everything.
Yeah.
They love everything. They need everything. They need everything. Yeah. So it's just not applicable when they're that young, but... And then I'm reading Pursuit of Justice, which these two have been hounding me. Relentless.
William Boyd Gardner.
William Boyd Gardner.
Willard.
I was like, Willard doesn't sound right.
Willard.
We apologize. Boyd. Sorry about that. But anyway, I'm about a quarter of the way through that, and so far I like it better than I did.
You need to find a time just to read the rest of the book straight
through. Well, I've been reading these other two.
I know.
But I'm just telling you, because
it's so exciting.
You won't be able to stop.
No, you won't. Well, that's what I'm saying. Find a time.
I'm already very intrigued.
So good.
Especially compared to the first one, I am. And just how I love how confused he is about the whole...
Well, he's like, what should I do? Like,
I don't even know, did it really happen? And, you know, all this stuff. And it's like, yes, we read it. It happened. So.
You know, it was an interesting thing to write a sequel to Race Against Time. And it would be a difficult thing to write a sequel again, because it was such an... I mean, traveling back in time.
It's very...
But he presented it in such a realistic... I mean, he, you know, in a manly, realistic... I don't know. But still, you're kind of like, could it really... happen. It's like it almost could really happen, but afterwards, it's nice to have the reaction where you're like, was I dreaming?
I really liked that. So that instead of him, I expected him to stick to his guns and demand, you know, and instead he's kind of wavering, and I like that. Because that's probably how I would be.
Am I going insane? Am I losing my mind?
Yeah, and I like that. I appreciate that kind of writing. Yeah. So,
but the rest of it is even better. Yeah. You're really going to like it.
Remember, that was the book when I was sitting on the couch screaming and jumping around, and so my husband turned around, oh, you're reading your book. Because that's how excited I was.
I can't wait for his next book to come out. I'm on pins and needles now that I know.
Since Rob told us.
Sprung that on us last time.
Yes, I'm so excited.
And then, of course,
I've read A Heart Like His, which I started, if you recall, a month or two podcasts ago, and I just never got to it because I didn't have enough time.
Let's get into this.
Let's talk about that. I really like this. This is written kind of unique.
I don't get to talk about the books that I read.
Yeah, you
not yet.
Oh, okay. Go ahead.
We're doing this as an open forum, recall.
Yes. I'm sorry.
No structure today.
I didn't mean to throw off my own format. Continue.
Anyway, and I started it, and... I liked it, you guys. This is a real... It's one of the books that Deseret Books sent to us, which was perfect, because then it forced me to read it. I mean, I wanted to anyway, but this said, now I have to read it.
You guys can't see the gun I hold to her head to make her read these things.
No, this was not a gun to my head book at all.
This was written by
President Hinckley's daughter.
Oh, really?
And she's a former... I think she was in the Young Women General Presidency different things.
Right.
Anyway, it's her and about 8 other women in her relief society that get together and they talk about opening their hearts, how to open their hearts. And not just a service book or you know, a book about how you need to do this or need to do that to be these great people. No, it's more like...
Is it a personal thing?
A personal account for her of what she and these women did. Wow. And then it kind of gives you suggestions. Like, and I love some of these quotes. Oh, it's just...
I liked it.
Let me find something that I
liked. So this would be a really good Christmas gift, apparently.
Oh, yeah, you guys. Oh, this is one thing I liked. I'm glad I turned to this page, because I didn't bookmark it. I never do, as these guys can attest. But it talked about, she was saying that when you have a closed heart, when you're grumpy or you're self-absorbed, I think is the best way to put it, your heart doesn't, it's not, maybe even physically, I don't know if it's physically, but you're not... open. You're not ready to hear anything else. You don't want to hear anything else. You're not paying attention to anybody else. You're very self-absorbed. And she compares that to having it tucked in the back of your chest. And I think to some extent you feel that. Because of course your heart isn't going to move dramatically. But the feeling of it, and she's right, it's very closed. And then she talks about how when you are in a charitable frame of mind or thinking outside of your, or receiving, that's the best way to put it, your heart is more open and it's more towards the front of your chest where you're feeling more giving and so forth. And she brought out such a good point. I never thought of this. And that is that opening one's heart creates energy and closing one's heart depletes the energy. So if you think of it in terms of energy as a physical,
energetic thing, because I was just going to say that's probably where our energy is located. If it's more internal and we're not, but if our energy is open and...
Oh, yeah.
You know, because, you know,
and
we
I think
all,
that
is
very true now.
That
I thought
before,
it, that was an aha moment for me. Mm-hmm. I was sitting there going, aha. You know, literally an aha moment. It was awesome.
It's something
that
you know, but that, be able to see it like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, when you visualize it like that, when you think of it as literally an open and enclosed and front versus back, that's exactly what it is. And
opening,
it totally affects your energy. And I just went,
creates
wow.
energy? Is that what it says?
Yeah, opening, an opening heart creates, an opening your heart creates energy. So,
and
hey, anybody who
more energy.
Doesn't have any energy, there you go.
Open your heart.
Forget ginseng. There you go. So,
isn't ginseng for memory?
Oh,
yes, it
memory.
Is.
Sorry.
It is.
Hey, no. As I say, isn't that for memory? Because obviously I don't remember.
Good. You know, the way I look at this, with the opening of the heart, it's also opening your heart for the spirit to
absolutely.
To guide you.
Make space for the spirit.
Absolutely.
Because if you want to be guided by the spirit in your actions, if you have a closed heart, you're not
absolutely.
Going to be open to having the spirit guide you.
Absolutely.
In ways,
you're not
going
to be open to
do.
Anything.
Seriously.
You know? It's like you're this fabulous. Isolated little cold hard shell that's just floating around in space somewhere.
Well, it's like you
know?
People like that, that
oh, yeah.
are,
closed
you don't
off.
Want to be around them. They're hard to be around, I should say,
yeah.
and they're hard to love
right.
unconditionally because they are so closed. And they or they only tell you all of the awful, horrible things that are going on in their life, and you're just like, and it's very draining. It's very
and they,
draining.
They don't give anything back to you. That's
no.
what's hard.
Those
not
are the
that
hard
you
ones.
Are,
yeah.
Not that you should do anything because you're going to get something back, but it's nice. It's validating. It's,
validating is the best way to put it.
You know, it's a good. It's nice to be able to give of yourself and open yourself and have it return because
right.
it creates such a good
right.
bond and there's love shared there. But when it's not returned, it's a hard thing to deal with.
And sometimes. I want to read a part in this too because this is why I said it's kind of unusual the way she's written it.
Who's
she has,
the author again?
It's Virginia H. Pierce, and she puts this is I think chapter gosh what 3 or 4. Anyway, and it's she has an experiment, and on some of these chapters she has experiments.
I like
some
those.
Of them she just talks about it, or you know, and she has lots of scriptures referenced in here and quotes by C.S. Lewis, which I adore.
Yes,
it,
yes.
Which
yes.
will lead me to my next book. But, anyway, and then she just has like this one is the experiment is I will be more aware of the condition of my heart, and with that awareness, seek to keep it more open towards others. I will do this in the normal course of my life. And I feel not feel pressured to bake a casserole or, you know, go out of your regular and ordinary way to do something. You're not going to feel that pressure. It's like I went to the post office and ran into a guy from my ward, and I just thought, well, gee, you know, he probably could use a ride home because I knew he came off the bus because I happened to see him, and he's an older gentleman, and he had his granddaughter with him, and I thought, oh, you know what? I'll just see if he needs a ride. You know, I'm here anyway. And hello, I mean. That was just one thing I thought, well, this is not anything big, out of my way. This is just
a normal everyday thing,
I felt so good. And I left there and I dropped him off because he ended up coming home with this humongous box.
Aww.
And he would have had to ride the bus carrying his little 3-year-old niece or granddaughter, who is a handful, but sweet little thing, but a handful, you know, 3-year-old. And I'm like, yay, I opened my heart. This was very excited because that's what she's referring to. It's not, you know, go take over the meals for your neighbor for the next 3 weeks because she had a new baby or, you know,
anything
it's
out of
little
the way.
Things.
Sometimes it's the small things. That's
sometimes.
What
and that's
said.
What she
it's
said.
A lot of times
yes,
the small
most
things.
Of the it times is. It will be.
It is. And then she
right.
goes on to say, I will notice the spirit and be willing to honestly report what happened or didn't happen. In doing
being
so,
accountable
being
for
accountable.
Your...
I will try to understand my personal stumbling blocks and my strengths. And then she has a little spot where you can write it in here. And you can your modifications is what she says, and then she cautions us: don't set out to do anything different. Observe the physical, emotional, spiritual response of your heart, independent of your words or your actions. Awareness is the key.
This is
so
a book
aware.
I would love.
Guys,
I have
awesome.
Got to read
it. It's
I want
awesome.
One.
Highly recommend it,
very
and I
good.
Think it'd be a great gift just for your mothers, wives, daughters. You know, it's a very
sisters.
I would say sisters,
anyone.
And you know, even
yeah.
I know it's really society men out there, but you know what? You have heart.
A Heart Like
so.
His, Making Space for God's Love in Your Life by Virginia H. Pierce.
And it's awesome.
Sounds
guys.
Like a winner to
it
me.
It is. Definitely. Awesome book. Way to go,
for
Sister
your,
Pierce.
For your spiritual friends. That's wonderful. I love that.
Or
I
your not-so-spiritual
you
friends who you think need to kick in the pants.
So but is that really the spirit of keeping...
But then again, that kind of defeats the purpose of the book, so...
You know, what do they say? It's easy to point out the faults in others, but harder to look at the faults in ourselves.
So maybe you should read it first and then give it away.
If you're going to read it and it touches you and you want to give it as a gift, write your testimony or how it touched you inside the cover.
That would be a very appropriate book to write your testimony in for someone.
That is great.
That way, you know, you can share how it touched you and it will be sincere from the heart. And the fans is sure hard to have when it comes from somebody's
It's a
heart.
Fantastic book. Fantastic book. Should I talk about my second one?
Yeah, go ahead. You're already here. Go ahead.
Well, we were talking about C.S. Lewis briefly there, and I don't know how many of you read the Screwtape Letters.
I tried. I listened to it. It was hard.
Shannon and I were book club a while ago, and I could not get through it. It's very unique, and it's very odd.
It's worth it, but it's
a good read, but it's very difficult to get through.
You can't listen to it. I bought it on Audacity, or no.
Audio something, rather.
Whatever that one is on
my pregnant brain.
Yeah. I can't remember. Anyway,
can't forget.
I listened, and it was hard enough for the people who read it. It was impossible for me listening to it to follow. So if you're going to read it. Don't listen.
Yeah, don't.
It's more confusing listening. It's one of those things you want to be able to go back over until you're like, sometimes there's a few parts where you're like, I got
to reread it more than
once. You have to read that one more than once. And it's going to be like, rewind. The first two letters, and that was it.
They were good, but it was hard.
If I remember, it was a touch on. Wasn't it someone writing to Satan?
It was one of Satan's minions.
Minions.
It was Satan writing to his nephew.
Or something.
He has a nephew.
Remember that C.S. Lewis is a Christian writer and a Christian man. It is a beneficial book. It's not an evil anything.
Don't get us wrong, but it's just very difficult to get involved in.
If you're a C.S. Lewis fan, you'll love it.
You won't have any problems, but it's just difficult to get into. It's not like The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe kind of reading. It's totally, totally different.
So
and
is
I
this,
have
is
Christianity, too, like which I need to read that one.
Oh, I want to read that one.
Which I have it. I just haven't read it. Got it for Brady for Christmas last year, and he hasn't read it either. There you go.
It's almost Christmas again.
Yeah. I might just wrap it up and give it to him again. He probably won't even know.
He wouldn't?
Re-gift your own gift?
Why not?
Love it.
He probably wouldn't. I have an aunt that gives her husband the same card every year for his birthday.
Are you serious?
She just puts love, and I won't say her name because this might embarrass her, so I'll put her love. Her name is Anne, we'll just say. Love Anne, and then she gets it from him. You know, she'll find it like under the bed or whatever. She just puts it back in the envelope and puts it back in the closet and gives it to him.
Absolutely hilarious.
Does he know it?
No! That's so funny about the whole thing is he has no idea.
That is absolutely hilarious.
That's why you shouldn't date cards, I guess.
She does not date them.
Well, that's
she purposely. That's why she doesn't date her cards. Because we were talking about it one day, and she's like, "Okay, well, I do this," and I just about died laughing because I thought it was the greatest.
Oh, that's the best story. Thanks for sharing. That was hilarious.
That's a great one.
Okay, back to Serious Matters, the Enoch Letters. This is written by Neil A. Maxwell, so you know it's going to be good.
Yeah.
And this is a similar take on the Screwtape Letters, except a lot more readable.
Serious?
Yes, and a lot more readable.
You're saying something from Neil A. Maxwell.
Neil A. Maxwell, and this is one of the Deseret book ones that was sent to us, so I was forced to read it. But again, it was not a pull my arm out, please, I can't read this kind of book. It was... awesome.
That's good.
So, and what I really liked is this, in case you're not familiar with who Enoch and the people of Enoch, they were translated. They were lifted up off the earth for their righteousness, as compared to Sodom and Gomorrah, for example, which is not too far away from that in terms of scripturally. But the great thing is in the appendix here in the back, so that you don't have to try to find the story of Enoch, because it's in the Bible, and or sort of, a pearl of great price. And it's just kind of hard to dig it out, you know? You're just like, oh, okay, where in my scriptures? You spend half an hour trying to find the scriptures, right? I would.
I don't know where anything is.
All right. If it's in the Book of Mormon, I might be able to find it, but if it's in the Bible, I'm toast. I'm done. I'm just never going to find it. So, anyway.
Is it in the back then, the story?
The story. Well, he puts a synopsis of
what happened?
The scriptural version.
It's found
in the DNC and in Moses 6, 7, and 8. See, close. I said
really
the Bible,
good.
But it's pro great price.
That is really good.
Anyway, and that, I loved that because what I did is I was running out of time for this week. And so I just read the back part of the appendix, and then I read Appendix B, which is quotes on from the different prophets about Enoch, about the city of Enoch, and their righteousness and so forth. And then Appendix C, is a synopsis of the people of Nephi, which what makes that interesting is he takes a lot of their characteristics. This is, I believe, Third Nephi, the rise, when they are very righteous and then a decline. So, you know, how it just constantly goes like that over and over, as you are aware in the Book of Mormon. So he takes a lot of their characteristics, because there's not a lot written about the characteristics of the people of Enoch. But you know that they're going to have to be very righteous, or they weren't going to be taken anywhere. So, and what it is, I love this. This cracked me up. Some of this was really, really charming. He writes,
who's he writing as?
Okay, this is, the person he's writing as
is like Mahat. This is a fiction?
No. It's written in a fiction style, because it's all hearsay, so to speak. Supposedly this happened. This is based on the information. This is what I think would have happened. His interpretation, there we go,
okay,
of what he thinks would have happened.
In
letter form. And he's writing, the person who's writing the letters is Mahijah, I want to say.
Mahijah.
I think it's Mahijah. It sounds prettier. I like that. and he really did exist. Mahijah did exist. Omner is his friend that he writes
to,
who never writes back, which is funny because this one letter cracked me up. Greetings to my friend with the palsied hand, Omner. or greetings to my silent friend, or dear silent Omner, how come you haven't written? Basically, he doesn't say that. But, you know, when are you going to write to me? I know my servants handed this letter to you, right? They told me, so where are you?
That's someone question. Will be writing yes, because okay. I'm not a good letter writer back.
No kidding.
Now, was this a book that Elder Maxwell was working on before he passed away?
I believe so. In fact, if I'm not mistaken, this was his last one.
Wow. So this is definitely one, if you have a lot of his books, that you'll definitely want to add this to your collection.
Yes.
The Enoch Letters.
It sounds
Enoch
really letters. Wonderful.
I can't wait to read it. Yeah, I was really happy with the selection of books that Deseret Books sent us.
Thank you,
and
Deseret
what's interesting
Book.
Yes, it was,
is this was first printed in 1975, and it was originally called Of One Heart. So it's not an original writing. This is a reprint, but they touched it up, and I think he finished up the first printing in paperback, and it was redesigned and retitled, and I'm sure he did some touching up of it before he passed on. So, excellent. Wow. And then what's interesting is the very last letter in here is from Omner.
He wrote back
finally, and because Mahijah is converted, basically. He starts out very somewhat cynical and definitely reserved and, you know, hesitant, but curious. And so he learns about Enoch and all of his different things, and it's just an amazing, his journey through discovering his spirituality and how come the city of Enoch was taken. And then
something that's always interested me.
It's not a big book.
No, it's very thin. In fact, I read it. Oh my
word. How many pages is it?
There is 75.
So this is a 76? Good this is a good book. It is an interesting read, but for someone who doesn't like to read the 300 and 400 page books, this would be a great gift for someone who,
with the appendix, it's 85 pages.
See, that is, because my dad, he's not a real big reader, but this is something that he could pick up and he would enjoy.
Absolutely.
And that he could get through.
Oh yeah, totally. Yeah. And it's funny because when Omner finally does write back, the city's gone. So he says, what does he say?
Shoot.
I was at last awakened to the need to follow your counsel and to visit the city of Enoch. And it's like, oh, you're a little late, buddy. How does he go?
That's too sweaty.
And then he says, though along the way others repeated the rumor, I persisted to the place that was the city of Enoch and saw with my own eyes, of a truth, Zion is fled. Oh, Mahijah, what has happened? Where may I find you? And, of course, it's been translated. So.
That's sad.
Yeah, so it's kind of sad. But and then he starts talking about how he's going to read the scriptures and learn
from
himself.
He was left behind.
That was beautiful.
That was great. Because I was thinking of Left Behind.
Well, that just occurred just to me when you said that. It's like, oh, very appropriate.
That's kind of familiar. Oh.
I wonder what and then
Left Behind. Okay.
So that's it for me this month. I mean, I plan on doing a bunch more reading next month, especially since
we just spent 40 minutes talking about what those books and what we've been reading.
We haven't even gotten into the meat of what we have.
Are you saying that's not meat?
No, that was meat. I mean, that was the appetizer.
We were all
I'm just an appetizer.
Maybe we should clarify. We were assigned different genres. Hillary was going to explore nonfiction.
Shockingly enough.
Shanda would be doing
some
fiction.
Fiction and some Christmas
for adults
songs.
And things for adults. And I,
Sheila,
would be
doing
maybe
fantasy.
I should say who I am. No, I would be looking at books for children and preteens, possibly
and
teenagers. And well, a lot of the children's books that I looked at that are popular right now do have a high fantasy type thing. That a lot of the kids like. I mean, anybody that's into Harry Potter, these books will appeal to, and I'll talk about that more. But that's why we're going to be talking about certain things that we were assigned.
Well, the books that I read last month weren't very many, but I did, because we were talking to Jeffrey Savage, who would like to come on the podcast, and we want him to come in January, and he'll have a new book out by then, a new Shandra Covington book. And I'm pretty excited about that and how it's going to work. So, while we're not going to have a podcast in December, we're taking that off for the holidays. This is our November-December podcast. In January, we're going to be starting off the year with Jeff Savage. And I'm really excited because I went and checked out a couple of his books to get a head start on the reading for January. And I read the first Shandra Covington book, House of Secrets, which was awesome. I loved it
from
the very first page.
Oh, I'm
very
excited too.
It hooked me. It hooked me the first page.
How many books does he have out?
I don't know, but he's done some writing. I'm not exactly sure how many books.
Are we supposed to, during December, read as many of his books as possible?
I'm going to.
You guys can. No, I want to.
You can do whatever you want.
I want to, but I'm just saying, for those who want to read ahead before our podcast with him. You know.
Well, definitely House of Secrets, because that was the one that started it off. And then I read a book called Into the Fire, which isn't part of the Shandra Covington series.
Is it one of his?
It's his.
Okay.
Jeff Savage, Into the Fire. And that was, it was a book that was difficult on a level to read, not because the writing style was wonderful, the characters were wonderful. It was a very touching, engaging book. It was difficult because it's based on the story of Job.
Wow.
And this man, who is a successful man, he has built his company. He's a righteous man, and he's a faithful man. And through different circumstances, all of these things are taken away from him, even his health. And it's him fighting against giving in to the devil and to Satan's, you know, Satan wants to beat him, wants to have him, and he's fighting for his family with all his might. And it was just such, there were parts of it that made me mad. There were parts of me that I was cheering him on, like, you know, go, just. And there were a lot of parts that touched me personally, because I would fight for my family with tooth and nail if it came down to it. And to be able to relate to that. I mean, it was a man. This is a story that a man would really enjoy. It's from a man's point of view. And because men are the breadwinners of the family a lot of the times and the head of the household, and sometimes they're the ones that lead the faith in the family, that, you know,
yes, the patriarch.
Yeah, they're the, you know, making sure that you have family home evening and scripture study and things like that. I'm more of that.
That's
right now.
We're all putting ourselves. That's us.
But, there are some men who are better at that than their wives, and there's some wives that are better than the men, which is maybe why I related so well to it. Mm-hmm. But my husband, I know, would really like to read that book, because
this is good.
It relates to men on a manly level because of all the responsibility they feel for their family. And there were parts of it that made me so mad. I was spitting mad. So some of the things people did to this guy.
Wow.
Other times, a bit at the end, I was like, you know, that was a hard book to read as far as just because it was emotional.
It wasn't real pleasant.
It
was a real pleasant book.
There were parts of it that weren't.
Right.
But it was, you know, the good overcoming evil.
I love those books.
Which
those
is
are my
what,
favorites.
Which is what is the most effective writing to me.
Yep, I love
and
those.
So I would recommend it. I mean, if a man in your life is a Jeffrey Savage fan and he hasn't read Into the Fire, that might be a good book suggestion
good
for him.
Good recommendation.
Those are the only books I've read. I started Saboteur by Dean Hughes, which is a new book by Dean Hughes, published by Deseret Book. I am only a few pages into it because I got sick. And so I haven't been able to finish. And my daughter turned 9. She had her birthday parties and all this stuff going on. And my dog is sick. And so it's just, all these things have come first before this book. But I made an effort to read it, and I made it to page 35. And it's only the beginning of the story. It's only touching. It's a nice hardcover book. I want to see how many pages are in it. 472 pages. And I can tell you right now, I'm going to like this book.
I love Dean Hughes. I'll just be the first to say I love his
book. You know, this is one that a man is going to like.
Mm-hmm.
That, you know, it's a nice hardcover book. The front has a man with
binoculars.
Binoculars. It takes place in World War II.
Ooh. Oh, okay. Yes.
And it says a novel of love and war. And he is...
Looks fabulous.
I want to see what the little note they put in here, Desert Book put in here, because they often put a little summary in here. It says, like countless courageous American young men, Andy Gledhill, hero of small-town Delta, Utah, enlisted to fight in World War II. Hoping to experience the war as a paratrooper, Andy's wildest dreams never took him to the places and situations he would face in Saboteur, a novel of love and war. The Deseret Book is selling it for $25.95 for the hardcover. Hughes, who is a master of World War II historical fiction, portrays Gledhill's story with page-turner suspense and intrigue. Gledhill, an active member of the LDS Church, is recruited into the Office of Strategic Services to become a spy and a saboteur in the war against Hitler.
Wow.
He later realizes it hadn't occurred to him that lying to his family and drinking might be part of his job.
Oh, man.
From his first interrogation through several missions, he is nervous but determined to prove that he can perform the duties of the most top-level military spies in the country. Left behind is Gledhill's best friend and informally betrothed girl, Whisper, whom he promises to marry upon his return. That's not her real name, it's a nickname.
Oh, I hope so.
When Gledhill falls behind enemy lines, takes other lives, undermines the enemy, and feels powerfully attracted to a beautiful woman, his former life becomes a distant memory, and he begins to wonder if there is a God. He feels unworthy of Whisper. Readers will journey through the heart of World War II, embedded with resistance forces, seeing firsthand what true moral courage is all about. Learn what Gledhill's return home holds in store.
Ooh, I want to read it.
It's good. I mean, I'm on page 35, and he's just been going through the interrogation thing, and he just went home after the first initial interrogation. Right. He goes back in a month for training. And I'm just like, if it wasn't for feeling so bad and being so busy, I would have finished this book, no problem.
Right.
And so I had to come to the conclusion and realize I was not going to get through this before the podcast. But from what I can tell you right now, that the writing style is wonderful.
It's very engaging.
It's involved. It brings you in. And you really want to see what happens to this guy, because... I mean, who has never thought about what it would be like to be a spy or watch an Alias, you know?
Alias. Well,
But in this first interrogation, he up front asks him if he could kill mercilessly.
Ugh, man.
And he says he doesn't think he can. And this guy that is interrogating Andy, he's like, you're Mormon. You can't do it. It goes against all your values. You're not going to be able to pull it off and all these things. And
it's different in a ton of ways.
And he's saying, I'm willing to do this for my country. I'm willing to die for my country. I'll do whatever I need to do for my country. And he wanted to know if Andy had it. This guy interrogating him wanted to know if Andy had the gumption, what it needed to take. And so it got to the point where Andy just stood up and said, I don't even remember what he said, but he basically was just like, whatever. And he said what he needed to say for this guy to be like, okay, you can move ahead.
I want to read it.
I do too. You just got me... ready to
I didn't even know this was coming out, but I don't know when it was officially released, but it is in Deseret Books Christmas catalog. So if you happen to get that in the mail, you can look. But I personally think that a man, if you have an avid reader that likes a good hardcover book, 470 pages in there, into World War II, this would be an awesome gift.
Oh, I'm excited to read it too.
I can't
just
wait.
For myself.
I mean, this just, it is LDS fiction. It has the LDS themes that go through it, but the trial, how hard that with a moral dilemma in war is hard. I mean, my brother-in-law went to Iraq, and he was in the worst firefight in the war, and he saw horrible things and had to kill a few people himself. He's never talked about it.
Have you read The Children of the Promise series?
I haven't read The Children of the Promise.
Okay, that's what the same, you know.
Uh-huh.
Exactly. Yeah. And that was brought up in a lot of the characters there, because that's World War II. You know,
the moral part
of
it.
And, you know, I just think that was all brought up. It was so good. No, I love Dean Hughes. His writing style, the way I do his books, you sit down, you find a few hours,
and you get through it
and you read it, and you can't wait till you can read another.
I read those 35 pages pretty much all at one time.
Oh, I know.
So, I mean, I just sat there by the heat bit and was reading my being warm and reading my thing.
I love doing that. I love putting a blanket over the heat vent with a pillow.
When it's all cold and you're just... especially when you're not feeling good. That's all
that is the best way to read. Oh, I love to read.
But Saboteur by Dean Hughes. That awesome, awesome option for a book.
He is a wonderful author.
Oh, I
want to
read that one now. Great.
The other one that I had was... and I think someone might have...
Stolen it.
The Christmas jars.
Right here. It wasn't me, yay! It was placed here. What are you talking about?
I probably just put it there.
I placed it there, but it was placed there.
another book that that was part of my assignment to read, that I chose to read, is called Christmas Jars by Jason F. Wright. And I have heard about this previously. I believe that it's been out in Christmases before. Christmas Jars. It's a story about Hope Jensen, a woman, aspiring newspaper writer. She is the receiver of a much needed but anonymous Christmas gift, and she's determined to find out who gave it to her.
Aww.
And that search leads her to an unusual family with a long-standing Christmas tradition. Sensing a front page feature article, Hope desperately wants to publish their story, but doing so would be a breach of trust. What she decides to do will change her life forever. Mm-hmm. Destined to become a classic Christmas tale, Christmas Jars is a heartwarming story that will restore your faith in mankind and make you want to start your own Christmas jar tradition. In addition to that, I didn't get a chance to get to this one because, like I said, I was not feeling very good. But it's a small book. It's along the size of the other... like the Christmas box.
Right.
It's only, let's see, how many pages
is
it?
Which is one of my all-time favorites, and it always will be.
It's 140 some odd pages, 148 pages, something like that. 149 pages. And it's a smaller book. It's not your full-size...
I love books like these.
Compact book.
These are the best books
stocking
to give.
Stuffers.
Well, they're good for gifts, and they're good for... And it's like Hillary and I were... We had talked about how these smaller books are for people that may not be as avid, you know, 400, 500 page book
readers. Very little cologne
exactly.
kind of a book.
You know, for some people that may not have the time, they don't
read
like
it on
to
the bus,
read them. Exactly.
Well, I can tell you a great one
for
that. Or something that you always pull out at Christmas, like one night in December, you pull it out to read it every Christmas.
Yep.
And this book, I believe, this letter that I was sent, an email that I was sent with an article talks about how this is now being made into a movie.
Oh,
there's going to be a Christmas Jars
so
movie.
Exciting!
And it's about the idea behind Christmas Jars is putting daily pocket change into a jar and giving the jar away anonymously during the holidays to someone in need, which is what is said in this email. There's an article that talks about it's published by Shadow Mountain. It says it was released a little more than a year ago, yet has already sold 100,000 copies. The holiday novella, inspiring thousands of readers to give Christmas jars out to others in need, is now the inspiration for a feature-length motion picture. I don't know if it's going to be along the lines of Faint Copper's It's a Wonderful Life.
One of my favorites, too.
Let's see. It talks about Hope Jensen, who's orphaned as a baby. Her adoptive mother had recently died. Her apartment's broken into, robbed and ransacked.
Oh,
and at this lowest and loneliest moment, is what it says in here, at this lowest and loneliest moment, she is secretly given the gift of a large jar full of money. And she, you know, wants to go and find out who gave it to her and everything. And she finds unexpected belonging with a family who holds dear this holiday tradition. Over time, she falls in love with their son, Clark.
Oh, little bit of love story there.
Gotta
love that.
Yeah. So I'm really interested. I wonder when it says this is good. I don't see anything about... Christmas Jars, the movie, is now in funding mode, looking forward to an enviable built-in audience-ready release in fall 2008.
Excellent.
So not next year, the year after that, we should be seeing the movie, The Christmas Jars. They're trying to get the funding and get everything together. And considering the kind of story this is, it's not going to be a problem. I think they're going to be able to produce
it
really well.
New Christmas movie that will really talk about something.
I think every family should have certain books at Christmas.
I
Christmas
agree.
Box.
We do that.
Christmas Jars.
Mm-hmm.
And there are other things that are other books that are along that same line that I'll just go ahead and talk about since we're already talking about it.
Yes.
The next one, we got another couple of books. And the first one is another smaller book, a good stocking stuffer. It's short. It's hardcover. And it's a smaller book. It's called The Innkeeper's Wife, The Rest of the Christmas Story by Linda M. Wilson. And there, it's a chapter book. It's the chapters are the meeting, the birth, the baby, the shepherds, the promise. And there's, let's see, it looks like there is 39 pages, so it's not real long. But this is one of those classic books that is a tradition book. Mm-hmm. It smells like it, too.
Aww.
For as much as I can smell right now.
Yeah, I was going to say, what can you smell?
Let me smell it.
It has some pictures. It has artwork in it.
Who has the artwork, does it say?
Let's see. It just says about the author. Consider the possibility that someone was sent to help at Christ's birth. A beautifully crafted piece of historical fiction, The Innkeeper's Wife gives readers a new Christmas story and a special witness about the most important birth in the world. The author, Linda Wilson, takes a deeper look at what could have been as she allows us to view the nativity through the eyes of Hannah, Mary's midwife.
Aww. She had a midwife?
I don't know. I think that's just kind of like
you know what? The possibilities of it.
That makes sense.
What would Joseph know to do? You know?
Joseph wouldn't know anything.
Well, Mary had never had a baby before either, so I imagine there was probably somebody who could
illustrated
help.
By Brandon Dorman. It says these illustrations are just beautiful.
They're very beautiful. And it's just a short, it's something that you could read together as a family for a family home evening.
Aww, this is so neat.
Talk about, you know, when you're talking about the nativity and everything, and just going into a different view of it. But it looks really nice. I can't wait to read it to my family.
That's the best picture right there.
Like the one of Christ in the manger, or with Mary.
Yeah, Mary's holding the baby in the midwife.
I suppose that's Hannah
and
Joseph.
Yes.
But it's readers travel back in time with Hannah, the innkeeper's wife, to the day when Mary and Joseph came to Bethlehem.
Do you want to hear this?
Yes,
this
go
will
ahead.
Touch you with you having a baby in a few months.
What does it say?
This is the midwife. I guess this is Hannah speaking. She says, "Oh, of course, every birth is a miracle, a gift from God to rejoice in. But this was different somehow than all the others. Even as I felt it, I wondered, where is this intense feeling of joy and love coming from?"
Aww. She's talking about baby Jesus. She could feel
love coming from him. That's wonderful.
Isn't that neat? It was like, oh, make me cry.
An interesting thing about this is it says the chapters are divided by sacred Christmas hymns that families can sing together as they read the story aloud.
I was going to be singing them right now, but I chose not to.
Yeah, wonderful. Yeah. You have a wonderful singing voice. How wonderful.
This is a great book. I'd like this one.
This is nice. This was, you know what, as far as, you know, a family gift or something like that, a hostess gift at a Christmas
very
party.
Very appropriate for that.
This, The Innkeeper's Wife by Linda M. Wilson would be wonderful. It's such a nice, it's a good hardcover. It's very classic.
It is.
A keepsake.
It will
for
last
sure.
for a long time.
The next one I want to talk about is The 10 Virgins. 10 Women, 10 Stories, 10 Lessons for Our Day by Emily Freeman and The Painting, with paintings by Simon Dewey.
We love his work. I love his work.
I do like that. I love how they seem to glow. The paintings seem to glow, and I love it.
It's a wonderful gift that he has been given to.
This is based on the scriptural account from Matthew of the 10 virgins. And Emily Freeman talks about each of the 10 virgins. It says, author Emily Freeman provides a revealing presentation of an oft misunderstood parable as she assigns personal stories to each of the 10 virgins. Featuring new art by Simon Dewey, The 10 Virgins allows readers to align themselves with the particular character traits of each virgin, each being given an identity and assigned a positive quality or virtue. So it helps you identify with one of them and maybe see the importance of filling your lamps with oil and everything that comes from the parable of the 10 virgins.
I like that.
The paintings are beautiful.
Like I said, I love anything that he does.
This book is... It's like a long 8.5 by 11, the landscape. It is a really nice collection of paintings and story and personal stories.
What is that?
This says,
"The
shopkeeper reminded each villager who received a lamp to return to his shop often. The tiny flame the lamp produced could not be maintained without an ongoing supply of oil, and the lampmaker's shop was the only source of oil in the village. But the path to the top of the hill was steep, and the journey took time
and
effort."
So that's the lamp maker?
I don't know.
He's a very
handsome
man.
It looks like Jesus to me.
I know, he looks like Jesus to me, too. I thought, oh, that's really
beautiful. It could be. Maybe they're just putting that.
I see. It's very wonderful. I mean, look at that picture. It's like, wow. It's almost breathtaking.
It says those seeking oil would arrive at the lamp maker shop at all times of the day or night, and each was met with a warm welcome no matter the hour.
This would be a great family gift. If you have to buy a present, if you exchange gifts with, like, your brother's family or your sister's family, or, you know, this would be a great gift to give as to the whole family as a whole for them to use during family home evening or Sundays.
But look, this one's an older one. There's a younger one. They give them names. There's Eliana.
As the different
versions. Leora. Ashira.
We should look at these. These are beautiful.
Gabriella.
And does it give a little bit of story or background on each person?
It does. It talks about her lamps. They each have different lamps. And there's Malka, Dinah, Nava. I think that's how you say that. Lyra's.
Oh, that one's cute. Look at that little
thing. And she's looks like the youngest one. Lyra's had a hard time waiting for her lamp to be made. Often she would run into the shop pulling her windblown hair back into place, her round brown eyes wide with anticipation. Yeah. And it just, she's sad. Her lamp broke.
Wow.
Jessa. And this is just something I think that would be a good family gift, but I think more maybe for a sister.
I agree.
Sister-in-law or a mother.
Or even a daughter.
And it looks like it's going to delve into something that is very personal. And I think it's going to be... Watch, therefore, for ye know neither the day nor the hour wherein the Son of Man cometh. Matthew 25:13. So, I mean, this is something that... Oh, look at the end. It has summaries of each of the women and little quotes. This is another one that I think would just be a nice book. It's not Christmas related, so it's something that can be looked at all through the year.
That's true. It isn't just a Christmas book. You could use it for.
Yep, you can use it for any time of year.
Very true.
Let's see. I think those are the only ones I have that are more traditional. But I know we've seen some in the books. Number one is the Mr. Finnegan's Giving Chest, where the character in there is based on Dick Van Dyke. The looks of it and everything. I really was hoping that we'd get to see that one, but
that would be cute.
There's that one, and there's I'm not gonna lose your place.
No, that's okay. You can
there's the Giving that. Chest. There is A Candle in the Window.
Well, this one is just a classic. That
which one? The Christmas Oranges. Yes, of course. There's the Christmas Oranges gift set that Single Book has. There's always you can always find good traditional Christmas books that. Art keepsakes. You can. There's also Sweetwater Rescue, which is a movie and a book that Covenant published. The Willie Martin Handcart story, and there's that one looks more of a little smaller, more of a landscape book. You know, the longer 8.5 by 11. It has pictures and stories to go with it. It's more of a family oriented one. On the other hand, The Price We Paid by Andrew D. Olson is more like it's a hardback book. It's a bigger book. It goes more into depth, and it's divided into the two sections, the Willie Handcart Company and the Martin Handcart Company.
Really? So it divides it?
It divides, because they didn't actually travel together.
That's right.
So
that's right.
They deal with each of, I mean, this looks good. This looks really... It's very historical. It goes into things. Look, is that a picture or a painting?
Let me see.
It's just a black and white little bit. But this is a more in-depth for those people who really want to read more into it.
About the history.
The William Martin Handcart Company is more family-oriented. It has a lot of pictures and paintings and things. More along a family-type story.
Oh, just thinking about it makes me cry. Get all teary-eyed, you know?
And if there's the sacrifice that they did make. Yeah, there is...
The gospel.
There's a lot that can be learned from reading those. The perseverance, the strength of the pioneers... You know, things like that. And for some reason, that just touches such a strong point, and especially as members of the LDS Church, because of what it means, you know. So, Christmas Bell for Anya is another one that looks like it could
Doesn't
be
that
tradition.
Look cute? That one looks
8-year-old good. Anya and her widowed father, the Christmas of 1917, held special significance in their tiny Siberian village, with handcrafted Christmas bell awaiting Christmas morn.
Siberia.
A beautifully illustrated story underscores the true reason for celebrating Christ's birth. Both a CD and DVD version of the original performance of the story are included.
Serious?
Yep. Wow. See, it looks like Siegel has this for about $16.
That sounds
great. You know, and of course, there's always music. Tabernacle Choir.
Have to have the music.
There's always Christmas CDs to give to.
You know what one of my favorite Christmas CDs is?
What?
You're going to love it. It's Donnie's. He has a Christmas
Donny CD. Donny Osmond?
It is the best. It really is. You should hear it. It has the best
I have to hear it.
He has the best version of about the baby.
Oh.
What you gonna be about... I don't know.
I haven't heard that one, actually.
Oh, it's a great CD. Nope. Out of all my Christmas... I like... You know, there's a lot... Everybody has a Christmas CD, but this is a good one. I listen to it...
We all have our favorites, like Mannheim Steamroller and
I like those, too, but they don't sing.
Some people...
They don't sing on there, so...
Yeah, I like the old ones, like Bing Crosby and things like that. Those are the ones that are my favorite. Because they're just so traditional and all-encompassing. We're taking a second to flip through because we want to make sure that we're not missing a good suggestion, that any good suggestions that you might
want. I'm reading the Lion House Christmas Cookbook.
Mm. Yes, cookbooks are always a good idea, especially
ooh, yummy.
Christmas, the Lion House Christmas Cookbook. And I'm telling you, there's some yummy looking food in there.
I'm just going, diet? What diet?
You know, and for those of you who have Pride and Prejudice fans in your life, I saw in one of these catalogs, there is the Colin Firth version, the A&E version of Pride and Prejudice. It comes with a box DVD set and also a book. Like, and I'm trying to find the details so I can give it to you.
Right here.
An
extra making of DVD, and it's $59.95, and I'm telling you, that's probably worth the book? Money. Yes. Limited edition package includes special collector's book and an extra making of DVD.
That's really? That's on my Christmas list. I want that.
Oh boy.
Hint, honey.
Just go buy it for yourself. That's what I do. I just buy it and then wrap it up and put my husband's name on it.
To me from my husband.
Then I get what I want.
That's wonderful.
You know, yeah, it is wonderful.
I emailed my husband a list last week and I said, if you stray from the list, there will be consequences.
I have learned. You just buy it yourself, wrap it, put their name on it, and then you're happy, he's happy, everybody's happy.
I agree with that. Sounds good to me.
That's a good idea.
I see another one called Finding Noel. Is this a new one by Richard Paul Evans?
Yes, it is. I'm almost positive.
Is the new one?
Let me see.
Because Richard Paul Evans wrote The Christmas Box.
From the author of the beloved classic, The Christmas Box, comes another inspiring story of the power of love and the wonder of Christmas. It says, there are stories, Christmas stories, that are stored away like boxes of garlands and frosted glass ornaments to be brought out and cherished each year. I've come to believe that my story is a Christmas story, for it has forever changed the way I see Christmas.
Oh, that's another good traditional one that would be a good gift.
I like that.
Okay, so, you know, we're an hour and 8 minutes into this now.
Okay.
I think we need to move on to your books that you were reading.
Right, okay. I was basically assigned to look into books for children for Christmas or books that preteens, teenagers might be interested in. And we were sent the Levin Thumps series. There's Levin Thumps and The Gateway to Foo and Levin Thumps, the second one, and The Whispered Secret. Now, when I had first heard about these books, I had been told that if you like Harry Potter, you're going to really love these books. Now, let me warn you, if you love Harry Potter and you're going into reading the Levin Thumps books and thinking that they are going to be like Harry Potter, you will be sorely disappointed. They are not alike whatsoever, but they both are very good in their own sense of being their own series. They were written by Obert Skye, and I believe it was Rob Wells that told us that Obert Skye is Robert Farrell Smith. I think that's what he said. But let me tell you, the reason why...
I wonder if we're supposed to tell that.
I don't know. Maybe we weren't supposed to, but
Either way.
he said it first.
Yeah, that's true. Was it in the podcast or was that...
It was in the podcast,
okay. Then, hey, we're innocent.
But I really think that any kids from maybe age 8 up to 13, I mean, I liked these. You know, I am the one that likes fantasy books.
Yes, you're the fantasy freak.
I mean, I'm not really a freak about it, but I just enjoy them. I'm not a freak.
Sorry.
I just really enjoy imaginative things, you know?
Things that take you to a place that...
Yes, I like to go to another world. And you do. Foo is another world.
Very different place.
Well, it says, let me tell you about this. Let me read what it says. It talks about Levin Thump. He's 14 years old, and he has a very wretched life. And he learns he has a powerful gift. Oh, it's really bad. You know, and that's the one thing about these books. Things start happening to Levin, and they get worse, and they get worse, and they get worse. And it's like, you know, at least in Harry Potter, something bad happens to Harry Potter, but then something good happens, you know? Uh-huh. It's just not all bad after bad after bad. Oh, I just felt so bad. It's just like, when's something good going to happen to this poor guy? I feel so bad. But there is a secret world, and Fu is a place created at the beginning of time, making it possible for mankind to dream and hope, aspire and imagine. And it's the place where your dreams are made. You dream, and your dreams come from Fu. The people in Fu basically help you dream, and help you hope, and help you imagine. See, I must have a Fu brain, you know, because I loved it. The imaginary. I like the, you know, that's what I liked about this. There's also another character in here who is from Fu that has come back into reality, is what they call the real world. Mm-hmm. Her name is Winter, and she can freeze things. That's her gift. And what's really interesting, at the back of the second book, I didn't even notice to see if it was the back of the first book, too. It is. He explains the order of things, what all of the different people are, who's who in Fu. He explains it, the order of things, who Nits are, who Lythans are, who Cogs are, Offings, Rants, all these new things, you know, that they all are have a place in Sycophants. They're assigned to people who accidentally step into Fu, and they're coming to help people. There are certain ways to get into Fu. When the stars align the right way and a crack in a sidewalk aligns the right way, you can accidentally get transported to the land of Fu.
Really?
Yes. How interesting. It really is. I mean,
forget
it really
about
is.
Breaking your mother's back.
Exactly. It was just really interesting. But I really like what the whole idea of these books are, because it says children reading this book in this series will learn the value of dreams and aspirations in their own lives, and just like Levin, they must fight to protect them and make them come true. The message of hope and courage contained in Levin Thumps is more important today than it ever has been. And truly, it is a book. I mean, by the time you read these books, Levin goes from this little wimpy 14-year-old that's been beaten and abused all of his life, not been loved all of his life, to someone at the very end who's turned into, in the end of book two, where he has turned into this wonderful person who believes in himself. He's had the power. He's found the strength inside of himself that he did not know it existed. But through his experience, he became this very wonderful, strong, powerful, courageous young man.
So do you think that the preteen and teen boys are going to like that more?
I think the girls and the boys. No, because Winter is there for the girls. You know? I mean, but I even gained something from reading about Levin. You know, my heart ached for him, but as he grew stronger from each thing that happened to him, and it happened constantly, it
Which
was
is what
just
happens in life.
It does. I mean,
Amen.
It's just like one thing after another. But the first book went pretty fast, Love and Thumps and the Gateway to Fu, because that's when you're getting introduced to everyone and and what's happening. The second book, it took a while to get things moving, because there's so many things along the way before they actually, I don't know, you just have to read it. It's hard to get into it. That could be too much.
Did you say by the end?
Oh, like the last 6-7 chapters. Whew, they went really fast. They were great. Yes. But it says, it just always talks about how dreams are an essential part of life. This is neat. It says, in the Levin Thumb series, Obert Sky has captured the importance of dreams and the terrible consequences if the ability to dream is lost. The bad guys in these books want to come into reality and steal the dreams away. They don't want anybody to have that hope. They don't want anybody to have, you
they
know,
can steal
that
my daughter's nightmares. That's okay.
Yeah, I know. That's where they come from.
In the nightmares?
Yeah. So I bet that every child has some hope or dream buried deep inside them, says Skye. I want them to know that, like Levin, they have to protect those dreams and fight to make them come true. The Levin Thumps and the Whispered Secret begins immediately where book one left. Leaves off perfectly,
okay.
right off
right
the bat.
Okay.
It says, and there is, I mean, it really is a book, just like in Harry Potter, where good is trying to conquer evil. Same thing here. You've got your good guys, you've got your bad guys. They're trying to beat the bad guys, and the bad guys here, they are bad.
Is that how it is in your next book too?
Oh, the next book's really interesting. Okay, I really liked it. I would say I would highly recommend it for your preteens, your teenagers. And even for adults who like this type of book, because I really liked it. Okay, now my favorite one is Fablehaven by Brandon Mole. Oh, we are reading this together as a family. I went ahead and read the whole thing just to finish it for the podcast. Mm-hmm. But everybody, my 4-year-old, my 8-year-old, my husband, we're all thoroughly enjoying Fablehaven. It is a fantasy novel, and it does keep you on. It says it's sure to keep kids and adults on the edge of their seats, and it's true. You just cannot wait to get to the next chapter to find out what's going to happen. It is about a secret sanctuary for mythical and magic creatures. This is his first novel, and you are blown away that this is this man's first novel.
And who's the author again?
Brandon Mole. I mean, seriously, you can't even believe that this is somebody's first attempt at writing a book. You're going, huh? I mean, because I was thoroughly engaged the whole time and I couldn't put it down. I have to read you what Orson Scott Card said about this.
Okay.
It says, stories in which magic and fairy realms intersect with the real world are devilishly hard to write. In Fablehaven, Brandon Mole keeps the two worlds fully balanced, crossing over the boundary as simply and easily as drinking a glass of milk. Mole's characters are real, likable, and entertaining. The dialogue snaps and sizzles. Do yourself a favor and don't miss the first novel by a writer who is clearly going to be a major figure in popular fantasy. So true. But what's really cool is it's not all fantasy. I mean, you've got two normal kids, Seth, he's 11 years old, and Kendra, she's 13, and they have to go stay with their grandfather who lives out in this foresty area. And they have no clue what's going on. And little by little, there are little clues that are dropped about different things that are happening. And Kendra and Seth
kind of
figure these out.
Kind of sounds a little bit like the setup for Narnia, a little bit.
You know what? It really does. It kind of has that same flavor to it. Mm-hmm. But they figure out all these things, and then they get totally immersed into this world and find out that their grandfather is the caretaker of this, you know, this
sanctuary.
Mythical sanctuary for these magical creatures. They are all over the world.
Are there unicorns?
You know what? No unicorns that they've talked about.
I always liked unicorns. Oh, well.
There could be, but they didn't talk
There's
about
unicorns
it.
There's unicorns in Harry Potter.
I know there are. Yes. Seth is just your typical 11-year-old boy. He's always getting into trouble, and it gets him into trouble. And there's a lot of things that Seth does that's really stupid in this book. You just want to go, hey, man. And Kendra's the typical older sister that's trying to keep her brother in line. And yeah. And,
I know that role.
But there are jealous fairies, greedy trolls, plotting witches, spiteful imps. Ooh, those imps are bad.
You know, this sounds like a fun book.
It is really, like I said, my whole family is just totally loving this book.
I loved stories when I was younger about kids going into different worlds, experiencing different things.
Right.
I had no idea what the Lion and the Witch and the Wardrobe was when I was growing up. Those were things I discovered when I was older.
Like I said, if you like the Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe, this is the same flavor of that. I mean,
I really think that this book would be fun for my kids to
learn.
It is. I know that they would like that.
I know it is. That's why I did the experiment of starting to read it with my family first, because I thought, I know I'm going to love it. There's no question. And of course I did. But the rest of my family is, you know, we read a chapter a night. Yeah, we read another chapter and it's time for bed. I mean, this is what we've been doing at night. The TV's off, we're taking Fablehaven out, and we're reading
Fablehaven. So this would be a good book for for a wide range of of ages.
Well,
adult, and for to be read to kids
as
who
a
like
family.
Those things.
To read it together as a family. It's just
preteens
really
or teens especially would
probably
like that.
Well, what I like, there's that good versus evil factor. It also has so many lessons for your kids to pick up along the way. They are told when they're first are there, grandfather tells them, there are rules that you must abide while you are here. If you break those rules, there are very heavy consequences.
And of course,
it
breaks the rules.
That one we read. That's The Mask. What was that?
Oh,
Extravaganza.
Yeah, the Extravaganza.
Kind of like that.
It's really, really interesting, you know, because it says the diverse inhabitants of Fablehaven, good and evil, are kept in check by arcane laws established when the refuge was founded. When those laws are accidentally broken, the children learn that some mysteries are better left unsolved.
Oh.
And there is an unfortunate blunder that happens on Midsummer Eve that unleashes an ancient evil that could destroy Fablehaven. That could destroy every person, including the grandmother, the grandfather, the children,
really?
Everyone. The end of the book.
It's so
I'm sitting here reading this, you know, late at night, like at 1 o'clock in the morning, and just going, ew, you know, it's pretty,
suspenseful?
Here's the part where it's going to, yes, it's very suspenseful. It says, children reading Fablehaven will come face to face with some of life's most important lessons. There is great protection in exact obedience. Consequences are an essential part of bringing order and justice and harmony. Vanity is a weakness that blinds us to what matters most. What we don't know can hurt us. and given the right circumstances, we can find the courage to do what we fear the most. So
it sounds like lessons from the Book of Mormon. From,
seriously.
You know,
it's good.
Just basic.
I loved it.
Basic principles and stuff.
Seriously. And the second book is coming out in the spring, I believe. Oh, this is so cool. Let me tell you about this really fast. There is a reader's guide at the very back that he has included.
Really? A reader's guide?
A reader's guide. So you can, as you're reading through it, you can either to start conversation, like if we had all read Fablehaven, it would help us with some conversations.
So for like reading groups.
Yeah, exactly.
That's awesome.
Isn't that fun? There's like 11 questions to start discussions and talking about. It says, circumstances arose where many of the characters in Fablehaven had to risk their lives. Do you think you would risk your life for anything? If so, what? Just questions like that.
Those sound like things you could exactly. ask your family.
Hey, we had our family home evening lesson on Monday night about obedience. Because I thought we could pull this in.
Yeah, seriously. Why not? I mean, obedience isn't just what's obedient in the Book of Mormon. It's consequences in life.
Exactly.
It's laws of the land.
Exactly. But he has a website, fablehaven.com, that I have not gone to yet that I really want to.
Fablehaven.com.
Fablehaven.com. But his next book is coming out next year, 2007. And I'm just going, I want to read it. I want to read it right now. But
patience.
Thoroughly,
that's the hardest thing.
Thoroughly enjoyed this book.
Okay, so Fablehaven is highly recommended.
Highly recommended. Okay. I mean, like I said, we're still reading it as a family. I went ahead, read the rest of it. Now, my other books that I was looking into, I truly have over 100 Christmas books.
And four children.
Four children.
I have one.
Well, and the reason, you know, me being a teacher, I get a lot of them through book orders, you know, because I can use my bonus points. But a lot of them people have just given to me as books, gifts.
My Christmas books are limited to Clifford. Oh, and like Hugley's Christmas and Hugley's Family and stuff. The Ted Arnold taught.
I know what you're.
Ted Arnold.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about.
So I don't have any of these classics. So
now, a total classic that you have to have, which you cannot not have. Is the Polar Express.
Which
now,
I don't have.
The movie, that was cute. It's not does not have the magic that Chris Van Allsburg books does of the Polar Express. As you go through and you really read it. You know, I love, and I know teachers all over the country do this. They read the story about the Polar Express. And then at the very end, I love the very last page of Polar Express. It says, at one time, most of my friends could hear the bell, but as years passed, it fell silent for all of them. Even Sarah found one Christmas that she could no longer hear its sweet sound. Though I've grown old, the bell still rings for me as it does for all who truly believe. And I always wear my bell, my Christmas bell, when I read this story to my kids. And I ring it, and I say, can you hear that? Can you still hear it?
Oh,
that means you must still believe
wonderful.
In Santa. You know, it's just fun. I read this every year to my own kids. Some other books that I totally have loved. Thomas Kincaid, you know, the famous author.
Painter. Uh-huh.
Has books out now where he has done the pictures. He's painted the pictures. And they have put them to famous Christmas songs. Away in a Manger. I think there's a new one out to Silent Night. You have
really?
To here, pass that around and look at this. This is absolutely gorgeous.
Well, I love Thomas Kincaid's paintings. He is such a talented
one.
Man.
Of my favorite painters.
Oh, and they're to the lyrics.
Yes, they're to the lyrics of famous. This one's to Away in a Manger.
Oh, this is wonderful.
Like I said, I'm almost positive the new one that was in the book orders this month.
The Silent Night.
I think it was Silent Night.
Oh, this is wonderful.
Okay, now if you guys like Max Licato, you know what the books that he's
done. Yeah, he's done some very good. Like,
yes,
I'll love you forever, whatever that
well,
is.
Well, he has done. In fact, there is in one of the books.
Most Marvelous Gift.
Exactly. Uh-huh. Those.
Oh, sorry.
This is a wonderful one. It's called The Crippled Lamb. I cannot read this to my kids without bawling.
Oh.
The Crippled Lamb.
The Crippled Lamb is very sad because he can't be out there with the other lambs. You know, he has to be inside the barn,
means he gets to witness.
That means, yes. Joshua, the black and white spotted lamb, longed to be like the other lambs. He wondered why he had to limp along with a crippled leg instead of running and playing in the meadow. Because Joshua the lamb was different, he often felt left out. Yet God had a very special plan for his life, as he does for all who feel alone. Joshua not only witnessed the greatest event in history, he was able to give the newborn king the one thing he needed most. Aww. Says Lucado was joined by his daughters to write his most touching children's story yet. And I have to tell you, like I said, at the very end, the last line in here, after he has gone over, look at this, you guys, after he's gone over by baby Jesus and given him warmth, the very end of the story, his last line, he says, God does have a special place for me. Oh. I mean, it's just, it's very, very touching. Oh. I would highly recommend this book a family book for Christmas to have, okay, because it's called The Crippled Lamb. It is by Max Lucado. It's just fabulous.
You know, I love this last painting in Thomas.
Isn't that beautiful?
I love it. It's just, it's
yes,
wonderful.
Yes, wow. Yes, yes.
It's
yes,
very beautiful. It's a Jerusalem in the background. Or no, Bethlehem. I'm sorry. And baby Jesus in the manger and Mary kneeling beside him with the, I don't know, maybe the crippled lamb is one of those.
Right, who knows?
And the stars shining down on where, onto the baby Jesus in the manger. And you can see the mountains and the night sky and the stars in the background. And it's just a beautiful painting.
It's a very nice one. Another book, I don't even know. I'm wondering if this one is still in print. I absolutely love it. It has a wonderful message. It's called Why Christmas Trees Aren't Perfect by Richard H. Snyder. Basically, it tells how at one time in history, all of the evergreen trees were absolutely perfect. And they always wanted to be perfect so they would be picked by the queen. And this one little Christmas tree starts giving shelter to rabbits and birds, and its limbs become damaged, and because it wanted to protect the birds and the rabbits and from the hunter.
So it becomes imperfect.
But to the astonishment of everyone, Small Pine is chosen and taken to the Great Hall. And
even though
he was not perfect. So it says, so if you walk among evergreens today, you will find, along with rabbits, birds, and other happy living things, many trees like Small Pine. You will see a drooping limb, which gives cover, a gap offering a warm resting place, or branches ragged from feeding hungry animals. For, as have many of us, the trees have learned that living for the sake of others makes us most beautiful in the eyes of God.
That's good.
This is another great book. I mean, I love
reading these.
I
hope this is still available.
I'm hoping too. I don't know.
Write this down.
Why
Christmas trees aren't perfect.
But it is
Richard H. Snyder.
I love books that have these messages that you can give to your kids. You know, they're just wonderful. Okay, now you're going to laugh at the name of this next book, but it's called Peef the Christmas Bear. Uh-huh. Okay, you ask any of my kids throughout the years that I've read this to them, I cannot read this, like my school kids, without bawling at the end. Because, I know you're, it's funny. No, Santa makes this elf in his magic little, you know, workshop.
Is this an elf?
I mean, his elves make this bear. They pick out the material and make this bear for Santa out of all of his scraps of material. And the first sound that comes out of this little bear is peef. And they push his little belly. And here's the little Christmas bear. I just love this one. It's so wonderful.
It's a rainbow bear.
He was made from all different scraps of material.
JC would love that. Everything's rainbow for her.
See, I read this last year. She'd probably recognize it. But he is Santa's best friend. They are the best friends. He helps Santa. He loves Santa. He loves living there. And he'll never grow old and will always stay brand new. But every year at Christmas time, he just wonders if there's something more, where all the toys get to go to someone who will love them, you know? Sometimes he dreams about being special in the life of a child. You know, he'll look in the window and see a bear with little jelly stains and wonder, you know, what he's missing. And his dream comes to an end, but every year he kept helping Santa, because he's Santa's best friend, you know? He's just always helping Santa. Santa loves him. And he dreams every year again about it.
That's
and
cute. Next to
Yeah, they're having hot cocoa together, and he's, you know.
I think it's great seeing that Santa has a teddy bear.
Yeah, I know, isn't that cute? Like that. And he says, oh, Santa, how I love you, but you must give me away. But every time he tried to say it, he couldn't say it. And then as the years go by, there's one Christmas where, this part always makes me cry. There's one
Deep
Christmas
breath.
Where he says, we have a special duty to the children, you and I. We can't forget a single one. You know the reasons why. We have to think of them before we think about ourselves. Besides, we have to set... See, I'm crying right now, you guys. Have to set a good example for the elves. I guess that's what I'm trying to say. Then he could say no more. For a little time, they sat together on the shore of Christmas Day that washed the far horizon of the night. And as the sleigh began to move again, a growing light began to glow against the inky canopy of sky. And then they go to a special house, and he says, you know, But Peef's expression stopped his words, for Peef was well aware that Santa wouldn't be around to fix each rip and tear. Here jelly stains do happen, button eyes just might get lost. But here's where he was meant to be, no matter what the cost. And giving up that little bear he'd made with his own hands from all the colors of the earth in bright embracing bands was how upon one special night with blessings from each elf that Santa Claus had given so completely of himself. The little teddy bear made Santa smile from ear to ear by saying with a twinkle, I'll be seeing you next year. So Santa's fingers pointed toward the tummy of the bear, and then he said, now all I need to do is touch once there. And as he vanished, one small child was thrilled beyond belief, for right beside a pillow there, a little bear said Peef. And I think the reason why I like this book so much, it shows the kids that Santa, it really emphasizes how Santa and what he means, everything about Santa is about giving. And I also think about,
you could bring the sacrifice.
Exactly. Totally. How Heavenly Father gave of his son. And that's why I cry every time I read this. But this is by Tom Hegg. I love this. I tell you, I like to read these types of books to kids just because they need to know the real meaning of Christmas.
Yeah,
and even though it's a story about Santa, it still talks about the real meaning of Christmas. So, oh, it's so hard. I've got something. Let me hurry. Jamperette, my author I've highlighted before. Yeah. Christmas Trolls and the Wild Christmas Reindeer. Super books. Love them. I already highlighted Patricia Polacco before. She has two great books. The Trees of the Dancing Goats. And Welcome Comfort.
Those are both
wonderful, wonderful books.
You know, maybe we could have those listed on the internet.
You know what? Maybe what I'll do, maybe I will type them up and then send them over to you so you can put them
on
the
website. We'll put them on as a reference for
An Amish Christmas. Wonderful.
Ooh, I would love to.
This is a great one. You know, anyone who's interested in, you know, I like when I am teaching every year to show the children all the different kinds of
celebrations,
the way people celebrate Christmas. And this is a good one to show. How, you know, I like to talk about Hanukkah, I like to talk about Kwanzaa, I like to show that what the Amish do. Try to look for good versions of some of the old classics. This is what I highly recommend. Here's a nice version of The Gift of the Magi. This is my most favorite version of The Little Match Girl, illustrated by Rachel Isadora. I know, I bawl through that one. You know, my kids are used to me at Christmas time just bawling when I'm reading Christmas books.
The Littlest Angel, this is the one that was written by...
Yes.
Someone that you know as a fan.
Oh, that was a different one. That one's a little bit different.
Okay.
That one's a book on grief. This is the classic book about the littlest angel, and this one is by Charles Tazwell, and it has wonderful, wonderful illustrations on this one. So try to find, you know, as you're looking for books for your kids for Christmas, try to find the classic books. There's so many different versions of all these classics that are out there. But there's also many new books too. This one is called Room for Little One. It's a Christmas tale. It tells how
from Scholastic.
It was a Scholastic. I don't know if that's only from Scholastic, but it's written by Martin Waddell. He's an author that wrote Can't You Sleep, Little Bear. And I was really surprised because I had that book and this one came out. It was kind of interesting. But he talks about, in this story, the ox welcomes all of the little animals in. Can we find a warm place to sleep? And he says, there's always room for a little one, for one more little one. And then Mary, and the donkey shows up and with Mary. And then they welcome. And at the very end, he says, that cold winter's night beneath the star's light, a little one came for the world.
Oh.
Sweet. So I will, and I mean, there's some others here. I know we're running out of time here. This is another classic, The Christmas Miracle of Jonathan Toomey by Susan, I'm not sure how you pronounce that name.
Wojciechowski?
Yeah, I bet that's what it is. But this is a very heartwarming story about a man who lost his family. He's a widower, I guess that's what a man would be. And a widow and her son come to him. And it just is a story about a miracle. This is a wonderful, wonderful story. But I will put this one on my list of books and a few others here that I also had. The Tale of the Three Trees, even though it could also be an Easter book, it also is very applicable for Christmas time. And I like different versions of Twas the Night Before Christmas. I have about 7 different versions that I'll read during the month of December for my school kids and let them compare and contrast. But my favorite one, of course, is by Jamperette.
Yeah,
Jamperette. Of course. You have to see her illustrations. They're just unreal. So So, but you know what? I'm really a very strong advocate about, as you are planning your list for your kids,
include books.
Don't just get them other things. Books are gift of a lifetime. They teach them how to read. They get them involved in new worlds. They, you know.
No, I mean, you know, we've already talked about how they have that new pop-up version of the Snowman at Night.
Yes, we love the Snowman at Night books.
I
can't wait to
get that. I want to get that one for JC because I know.
Oh, it's
darling. My kids have their own bookshelves and
so
their
do
own
I.
books. And
I do, too.
Book
do
orders too. Come and I'm usually yes. always ordering something.
Yeah, you always were very good at that.
Yeah,
you?
Because I just, I'm so, I love reading.
You probably get some of my books.
My kids love reading. You know, they love reading the books that I get for them, we don't have very many Christmas traditional ones, and I think that maybe maybe we'll make this a book year.
I think
we'll
should.
Make this a book, and
should.
We'll give traditional books to all my family. We'll just
you should,
you know, that's because wonderful. That's reading and listening to the stories and doing traditional reading, and those are the memories that make Christmas happy. And
you
can,
bet
you can continue those traditions on when your children have their children.
You bet,
and
you
that's bet. That's you know. One of the best things about traditions.
You bet. You know, every one of our traditions is that, well, we have a book that my mom made for us that has a different Christmas story you read every night. And the last story you read is the actual Christmas story from the Bible on Christmas Eve. But we also read one of my children's stories along with one of those others. And, you know, it's a wonderful tradition. And, you know, the good thing about reading to your kids, you have together time. You can take 10 minutes. You can take 20 minutes.
The TV goes off.
You know what?
And they're responding.
Seriously. And, you know, as far as Christmas gifts and plugging that again, you know, the electronic stuff's great, but there's nothing as wonderful as a book.
Especially when they're younger, they need you to read it to them.
Exactly.
And it's, you're taking time out of your schedule and showing them that you care about them.
That they're important.
To take the time to read to them.
So that's my big plug. Buy books for your kids for Christmas.
Sounds good to me. Is there anything else that you guys wanted to cover? Any other books?
No,
I mean,
no.
We talked about a lot of different books. And we talked a little previous things too. You know, like the new releases of Jenny Hansen and Rob Wells and different things like that in previous podcasts. So it was nice to be able to cover a wide variety of things that we've been said that we've been able to review, and hopefully giving you some good ideas for possible Christmas gifts. I know I have some good ideas.
Oh yeah.
So. So if that's everything, we'll just close on up and we'll thank you for joining us. And we hope that you and your families have a safe and enjoyable holiday season. As we're looking forward to being back with you again in January with Jeffrey Savage. Feel free to email or contact us at any time with any suggestions or join the forum or post on the forum at LDSWomen'sBookReview.com. And you can email us at Shanda, Hillary, or Sheila at LDSWomen'sBookReview.
We'll all have a good Christmas.
We will.
I hope you have a very happy Thanksgiving, Christmas, and New Year. And we will see you in January.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.